Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started.
Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today, we have an extremely intriguing guest. I'm a little excited. You can hear it in my voice again. It's a really unique profession that he's in, athletic training, but a caveat of it. So it's a real cool subset in the performing arts that we're really looking forward to talking about. Our guest today is licensed athletic trainer, Jay Christensen. How you doing, Jay?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm excited as well.
I'm really excited about this. I know we've been working on this for a couple months trying to get it all together. The fact that you're in a hotel in, I believe, Europe, correct?
Yeah, Scandinavia. I'm in Norway right now.
Oh, that's
so cool. Sweden, forgive me, Sweden. Norway's next week.
Okay, well, there you go. Hard to keep track of where you're at and what time sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you coming in and talking about it. Let's talk about what you do, where you're from, and it's such a unique career path that you have. Tell us where you're from, a little bit about your background, and how you got where you're at now.
Hawaii is home to me. I live there longer than anywhere else that I've lived. North Shore of Oahu, if you've been there, you know the paradise that it is. So leaving, some of us get priced out of that paradise and others leave voluntarily through work or other obligations. So I've moved around quite a bit. I've lived everywhere from Utah to Kentucky, Texas, Montana, California is where my car is registered and my personal belongings remain, Southern California. But
are your belongings okay after the week we had?
Yeah, thankfully, they're cozied up nice in the Inland Empire, just about an hour or so east of there. So
very good, very good.
Enjoyed a career of athletic training largely due to the fact that as an athlete in high school, I got injured a lot, which, like many, I think, kind of steered me that direction. And it became apparent that I'm not 6'7" and bound for the NBA. So the next best thing, sit on the bench with them and enjoy everything from the sideline. Admittedly, I got my interest kind of blossomed in high school. I wasn't a really great academic in high school, and the sports medicine class that I took was one of those few that really engaged me, and I was excited to do the homework and excited to kind of study and learn more, and I just kind of soaked it all in, and that really inspired me to continue that. For whatever reason, if your car breaks down, I'm no good to you. But the anatomy and the human body just kind of clicked. And so kind of followed that path.
Well, I got to ask the question then. What high school was it at? And who was the teacher that inspired you?
So it was actually in Southern Utah at that time, Cedar City High School. Ended up bouncing between that and a Kahuku High School, which is in La'ie in the North Shore. Mr. Decker was the professor. Shout out to Mr. Decker. And he kind of did a little bit of everything. The sports medicine class was one of a couple. He also taught computer-aided drafting and some other, I shouldn't say random courses, but other courses. So owe it all to him, which, to be fair, I have reached out since then and thanked him for his efforts. So
very cool. With that, you got inspired in high school, and it looks like you jumped up to the college setting, thinking athletic training, not too sure, or were you thinking a different avenue?
Yeah, early on, I always tell people I wanted to be a pediatrician very early in my kind of medical career, so to speak. I love kids and I love the idea. And then I, with a little bit of research, realized how much schooling is involved with that. And as I mentioned, it wasn't my favorite. So I kind of deferred to something different. Physical therapy was kind of the default at that point in the mid to late 90s. And I thought, well, maybe that's something. And after job shadowing a couple PTs, I realized that the work specific to sport wasn't exactly the focus all the time. So I found this niche, at least at the time, of sports medicine and athletic training, which kind of fulfilled both of those. I get a little taste of sport, but also kind of the hands-on physical rehab and things like that as well.
Which is always the fun part of this job, how unique it is and how it divests itself in so many different directions. And you really get to do a lot. You get to be a pediatrician if you work with adolescents. You get to be an internist. You get to be a paramedic. You get to be a physical therapist, so to speak. It's really fun in doing all these little different caveats of our profession.
I agree.
You got your MS in athletic training from what university?
The University of Hawaii at Manoa.
Great program. They've got a great, great leadership. Hawaii, first off, the only state in the nation that actually demands that all secondary schools, high schools, have an athletic trainer. So you got to tip your hat to that. But they are just innovative and ahead of the time. And when you went there, obviously, I guess growing up, you probably had some stuff you like to do on the islands, like surfing, golf. What other sports were you into?
As I said, I love basketball. I'll play it all day long if you let me, but my height at a certain level becomes an issue as I'm maybe 5'10", depending on what shoes I'm wearing. So as a result, water was always really appealing to me. It's one of my favorite places to be. So to be near the sea or in it between surfing, I swam quite a bit in high school, mostly just because I was good at it. I don't particularly enjoy the sport, but I like winning more than playing basketball and not winning. So I played water polo. I'm left-handed, so that provided an advantage to me a little bit there. And as a sprinting swimmer, that was really a natural fit, and the coach appreciated that. Played a lot of soccer growing up as well. Golf nowadays tends to be a very relaxing outlet for me as well, in that I find a lot of kind of just relaxation. Ironically, it's not always the case for most golfers, but it's very relaxing for me. I enjoy it.
Now I got to ask a question I've never asked. What size board and what type board did you ride back in the day?
Well, like everybody else, you start out with a long board and, you know, it's the size of a front door and it's, you know, 15 feet.
So
long.
True. So true.
Yeah. A 6'2", nice little kind of let me go and play on it and have fun. If it gets shorter and shorter, if you're familiar with surfing, then you get more dynamic movement. And I'm out there, I'll have as much fun as the next guy, whether I can get barreled or if I'm just getting pushed along by a wave. So anything like that.
For those of you not quite understanding what we're talking about now, it's a surfboard. So what size and what we like to do. I loved it. That's been a while. That was two children ago. So yeah. Oh, what a life it was. You go from Manoa, you graduate, and then you start working. Tell us about your professional career, because it's really gone kind of a really unique and special way.
Yeah, not by design. I think the idea of the non-traditional setting was appealing to me very early on, even in grad school. Whether I should check my facts, but to my knowledge, as one of the first students to work with the men's basketball team at the University of Hawaii, I'm sure it must have happened before me. But in my class and cohort and things beyond, I don't know that anyone else really had or has since, as it kind of overlaps with the American football season. And that's kind of the big, you know, everybody works football. But the second year of the program, I elected to defer the rest of the season in American football and start with men's basketball. The head athletic trainer at the University of Hawaii, Lynn Nakagawa, was fantastic. She was over men's basketball at the time and really took me in, and had said if I was willing to do that, she would help me go speak to the head coach and make sure that he was okay with it. So kind of creating my own little position there, so to speak, with admittedly a tremendous amount of help, led me to seek further guidance or other outlets other than the traditional high school, college setting, clinical, rotational thing. So as a result, the World Surfing Tour ends on Oahu every winter.
Yes, and, it does.
The Triple Crown is one that, you know, you watch and you hope that Eddie goes and all of these things that go. So I approached the director of medicine. His name is Leland Dow. He's a fantastic DO on North Shore and just respected by the whole community up there. And I approached him and said, "Who's your athletic trainer? Because I'd love to be, involved somehow, be a shadow or, be involved somehow." And he kind of looked at me like I was a little bit crazy, but he said, "We don't actually have one. Do you want to do it?" I said, "Yeah, that sounds fantastic." So we established a relationship working that together for quite a while. And as a result, I got to be really, really involved in the pro surfing circuit for a while. And it all sparked from just taking the initiative to ask a few questions and kind of see what my options were. I fully anticipated kind of a, yeah, you can watch and just stand over there and don't touch anything and don't get in the way to, hey, have a look at my kit. I'm working from a trauma perspective and a DO. What does the athletic training side look at like as far as material and product and things like that? And so it really got my kind of gears going, so to speak, in my brain of to how in this non-traditional setting I need to be able to adjust and flexible and things like that. And that translated to being able to work with professional golfers. I worked a ATT Pro-Am in Central Coast of California at Pebble Beach for a few years, and that was a really great experience.
I've heard of Pebble Beach once or twice, yeah.
No business playing any of those courses, but I've been very fortunate to have been able to, as I said, created these little niches of working with Olympians and professional golfers and the like. While I was moved to California, got an internship working in Major League Soccer, which turned into a position as an assistant and was a really great opportunity for those of the listeners who are familiar with professional sports. When the hierarchy changes, so do the staff. In search of a new head coach, the trickle down was that pretty much everybody else was going to be kind of moving on. And a few years of working at a high school level and really, really loving that again in the Central Coast, found myself connected with Feld Entertainment, which is where I work now. This lovely website of LinkedIn allowed me to update my resume and reached out. They were in California, allegedly, only to find out when they reached out to me that it was a touring position. And I mean, the rest is history, so to speak. And that's what I do now. So to kind of, I guess, elaborate, and this is one long run-on sentence, but basically, yeah, it's led me to the performing arts, which I never really considered, and I don't think a lot of people do. I think it's relatively new. About 70 years ago, Kenneth Feld is the owner of Feld Family. His father bought an ice show. It used to be the Ice Capades. Now it's called Disney on Ice.
Oh God, yeah, I know it. Been there many times. I've got daughters, so yeah, I remember.
So 1956, bought it, and as such, the company has grown to include live stage shows and a litany of other live performances. 80 countries, six continents, 3 to 4,000 shows a year. I was lucky working on 8 years now. I started out with a stage show. It's called Marvel Universe Live. And that was just a joy to work. The stuntmen and stuntwomen of Marvel are just amazing people and even better performers. And that opened my eyes to a lot of really fantastic things. And as the years have gone on, I've had the opportunity to also work with, as I said, Disney on Ice, Sesame Street Live. I worked with Jurassic World Live. I worked with Ringling Brothers, Barnum & Bailey Circus recently as well. And I guess the list goes on and on with their productions. They also run a production called Monster Jam. I have no business being there, nor do most athletic trainers, but something go wrong there, they need a little bit different kind of care. And the Supercross for motorcycles. So it's diverse, but it also, makes things interesting and keeps me on my toes.
So to say the least, you've had a very unique experience in the field of athletic training, from high school setting, college setting, to MLS, to performing arts. You touched on almost everything. The only thing I haven't heard yet is industrial or military, all the different avenues that you've been able to see.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of just burned through them all real quick.
All good.
It's interesting. I was admittedly one of the episodes prior to us speaking. Jacob, I believe is his name, working in the industrial setting was really interesting. There's a lot of carryover. One thing they don't teach you in school is really anything about workers' compensation or anything and the paperwork that comes along with that. Admittedly, a lot of learning on the job, but it's really fascinating as the industrial setting kind of expands. I found so many, I guess, correlations with this non-traditional setting and some of the really great benefits and also the setbacks and trials that come with that as well.
Now, personally, as a person who's dabbled a little bit in the performing arts, because again, I go back to my daughters who were dancers growing up and competitive dancers and on companies. And by default, I became the athletic trainer for the team and ended up traveling and lots of fun. But boy, does it open your eyes. I've always told my football players, give me a dancer any day. They're just mentally, physically tough and they'll perform through an injury that on any given day, a football player, you go, yeah, I'm done. Just amazing the mental toughness and physical toughness that these performers have. And I presume you've seen the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I would be a stretch in saying that the dancers, stuntmen, stuntwomen, and figure skaters as well, it's just a different culture. The mentality that, you know, unless it's actually falling off, I'm going to keep going without access to, you know, healthcare providers like athletic trainers on the sideline since a very young age growing up. You know, that's been the mentality is just keep going. You push through a lot to their credit and maybe discredit sometimes as well when they should be able to kind of take a break and let their body heal. But no, you're not wrong. That's another level of toughness that I struggle to find elsewhere.
Completely. And so right now in the country that you're in, again, we said that we established Norway, correct?
Sweden, yes.
Sweden, my bad.
Yeah,
Norway's
all, yeah.
Next week. Norway's next
week. I got
week.
It confused too.
What show are you working on?
Currently with Disney on Ice. There are 7 productions of it worldwide. There's currently a show in France. My show is here in Sweden. There's a show in Taiwan. And then there's a handful domestically in the United States and Canada touring as well.
I would presume then each company has an athletic trainer, has a J taking care of them, correct?
Yes. Far better looking and more qualified than I am, that's for sure. No, it's something that's...
I doubt that.
When we started, it was just me and one other athletic trainer. Her name is Corey, and she is just fantastic. Has since moved on and done other things that are equally great. But it was just the two of us, and we oversaw the entire company. So all of the shows that Feld Entertainment produces,
the
two of us. So we have really grown since this global pandemic, reopening up our shows. The initiative was we'd had such great success statistically, and you know, you imagine the financial, I guess, benefit of having that. Money talks and those numbers speak for themselves when we mitigate a lot of injuries and prevention with having an athletic trainer on the staff. So as a result, every show that's opened since then, as I said, the prerogative has been to staff it with an athletic trainer on the show. So currently there are 8 of us. I'm 1 of 8. At any given time, you could be asked to do any number of things, not unlike any other athletic training setting, I feel like. It provides a different kind of twist when you're touring domestically in the United States. You may be asked to drive or do other things, of course, but then you know, you may be asked to guide people through customs in an international airport, or you know, help with some of those paperworks and things like that. We have very qualified and fantastic people who handle that, but you know, as a staff, we kind of try to help out wherever we can. So it's some uniqueness for sure.
Now I'm going to presume that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that with this show, Disney on Ice, you're probably working with some former Olympians or Olympian trials individuals. So you're dealing with some, not just performers, but serious athletes who probably have previous injuries that you have to know about and take care of. So you're really dabbling, not just in performing arts, but high-end athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a stretch. There's Olympians and world champions, national and state champions, and so on and so forth, regionals. The athletes that I deal with on the day-to-day are here because A, they want to be, and B, they possess a skill that is very rare. I realize that as we watch some of the auditions that come through and some of the tape that's presented is, hey, I would love to be a part of Disney on Ice. Here's what I can do. And like the transition from high school to college, for example, can be pretty dramatic. So too is the performing arts, specifically in ice skating, and even more specifically in show skating, which took me a minute to figure out. What you see in the Olympics, probably a fair representation of maybe the most elite skating that there is. But just a half step below that, I would argue, are the show skaters, which possess equally talented athletes and the skills that they possess. It's just different. You know, as a figure skater in the Olympics, you have an entire sheet of ice that you're dealing with, and some of the footwork and skills that you possess are like none other. In show skating, now we add the element of sometimes as many as 20 or 30 other people on the same ice to maintain lines and choreography and dancing and stunts that go along with that. It's a different skill set, and it's not any less impressive. It's just different, and my hat's off to all of them, because yeah, I can't do the things that they do on ice on dry ground without ice.
I would just think of the same thing.
Yeah, they're amazing. They really are.
Now, what I really like about it, your career really came down to advocating for yourself and speaking up and just walking out, shaking a hand, say, hey, how could I be of use? Networking. And we hear this all the time, that networking really is the key to creating your career and moving forward. So I just love that this has come from just a couple of conversations, whether that was in college with basketball or on the beach at the surfing U.S. Open. Was that the one?
At Sunset Beach, but yeah.
Yeah. That, I mean, it's by advocating for yourself, you've grown into such a wonderful career. And the thought of every now and then working with Ironman is pretty damn cool, if you ask me. So I kind of like that. You travel the world, get to see different countries and interact with different people. What has been your favorite part of this experience so far?
Goodness. That's a twist on the usual question, which is, you know, where's your favorite country or city or whatever? My takeaway from the beginning, the allure of this position and this job is absolutely the travel, as you alluded to. I've traveled more than probably most, if not any other athletic trainer in the world, specific to my job. And that includes national teams and so on and so forth. I'm well over 40 countries and counting. So it's something that continues to draw me in and keep me here, is the allure of new people, new places, and my love for what I do, what we do as athletic trainers, and the ability to practice that all over the world. In that same breath, I think that being able to, as I said before, kind of have to be put on the spot and think outside the box, there's something to be said for trying to find supplies in Scandinavia or Southeast Asia or anywhere else for that matter to work with, and different rules as far as medicine that's available or even allowed. Working in the Middle East, I could tell you, is a whole nother ballgame compared to working in Southern California. That exposure to different cultures, different people, ways of thinking, not only just within the country, but even specifically and more narrowly on our show, there's a lot of different viewpoints of different people that I have grown to really, really love. And that continues to keep me here as well.
I could only imagine the diversity that you've seen in your company, let alone throughout the world with healthcare, just really must be eye-opening.
It's something that I cherish. I mean, I have friends all over the world, and as such, it's kind of fun to just sit back and consider the idea of being able to go somewhere and know someone. Then I guess to that point, the ability to enjoy the cultures and the people and learn from their different techniques and ideas. The position of athletic training, even we were just in the UK, isn't really a highly demanded thing. They have some sports physios, and that's not any disrespect to the UK and how they run their sporting world. But I've had countless conversations with medical professionals that have been exposed to athletic training, and their comment is always the same. I wish we had people like you here. And I think that reinforces our value, at least me personally anyway, to what it is that we do.
Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to AACITest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown.
Well, let's hope the NATA or somebody at the Texas office is listening to this podcast and hears that. I know there's a big push right now in Canada, obviously, right next door. We have different avenues in Japan that are opening up and other countries in Central and South America. I have former interns who were working in soccer, and I believe it's South America, and it's coming around. But yeah, like you said, I mean, you talk to somebody from the other countries, especially Europe, they look at us, you're a what? Educating them is, well, just like educating some of my parents when they first come into the high school. So yeah. What is an athletic trainer? That's fantastic to hear. They're saying, yeah, we need one here. That could open up some avenues for other people, new Jays, traveling around the world, which would be awesome.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. Now, what did you find as the hardest transition from a typical athletic training position into where you're at now?
I tell you, it's really one of the bigger transitions is kind of adjusting to life on the road. I was told very early on, it's not for everybody, and it's just not. You might argue it's not even healthy. As I said, I'll be in Norway next week. The week after that, I'm in Finland. The following week, I'm in Belgium, and we just keep going. It's difficult being away from family and friends. As I alluded to, your touring family is your family and your friends are just all over. I do my best to bring my family to me when I can. In the athletic training sense, as I kind of mentioned, finding supply sometimes, it's always nice to kind of preemptively fill up we have these crates that we call them, giant armoires that contain all of our supplies. But when those run out and maybe we've miscalculated or we end up doing a lot more treatment than we thought we would, sourcing that, it can be challenging. Finding different things around the world that are equivalent and within our scope of practice is always challenging. I wouldn't say it's impossible by any stretch, but there are things that our FDA has kindly filtered out that we don't have to worry about the contents of a lot of stuff that maybe I need to worry about what my athletes are ingesting or what they're applying to their body elsewhere in the world. Another challenge I find is reinforcing that I am in fact not a doctor. As the only real medical provider on the show of, close to 100 or sometimes more people, I am the first call or first text message or first conversation. And so reinforcing that while I'm happy to help in any way I can, also, teledoc is a wonderful thing. And buying in and having that trust with my athletes is flattering, of course. But I try to weekly reinforce this idea that while I'm here and I'm maybe a little bit more educated than anyone else on the show, please, please, please understand that, we're going to work as a team to figure out what it is that we need to do. So that's ongoing. I'm not a doctor, I swear.
One of my favorite similar stories in college, working in the athletic training facilities, sports medicine clinic, we would regularly have students who were athletes come in because they had a cold. Because they trusted us so much, or they felt like they were getting, my favorite one was strep, because man, around college, that just goes nuts. But they would come in and expect, because we had that healthcare background and we were so good with the orthopedics or the musculoskeletal issues that they had throughout the sports. They just figured, hey, well, you can help. No, got to go to the health center. We don't take care of that. And kind of interesting to hear the same thing goes on with these professional performers. And you see it at that level too.
Yeah, it makes a difference that my athletes range from as young as 18 years old up into well into their 40s and sometimes even older, admittedly. Something as simple as reading the back of the box when you're in the pharmacy. I love the conversation, but sometimes mom is a great resource. What did you give me growing up? Because I like that cough syrup better or whatever the case.
Hey, telehealth, or as I say sometimes, telemom, that's really comes a long way and helps a lot, especially when you're in Scandinavian countries. That might be the key. Call mom and get some insight. Love that. Now, how often, and I'm going to knock on wood before I ask this, does something occur where you have to engage, say, the medical resources outside of your company? So something happens, you need to call paramedics, the ambulance, and get somebody there. How do you take care of that medical emergency situation?
You know, it's interesting, and I think it varies from show to show. Ringling Brothers, Barnum & Bailey Circus is a whole nother animal, but it's not that dissimilar to my time with Marvel and stuntmen and stuntwomen. If you're jumping off something from 40 feet in the air and landing, something traumatic happens, then ALS is on site. With Disney on Ice production, thankfully, no one's that high up in the ground, despite how high they jump. But our procedure is the same. I defer to whatever the local procedure is through the EMS team that is present. That's a conversation I have every day with them prior to the show beginning, and ideally at the beginning of the week when we arrive. Sometimes, admittedly, language is a barrier there, but it does usually work out. And there's a translator, and we can kind of establish, okay, this is what I'm used to. Tell me what you're used to, and how do you want to proceed? As I said, if your state or your country spine boards, then great, let's do it. If they don't, great, then let's do it and kind of defer to the local policy there. With Marvel, it was a lot of acute, really more trauma-based. Disney on Ice, while they're very dynamic, there's a lot of fatigue and overuse issues going on. Fortunate that we had an athletic trainer there, and unfortunate that it happened recently. Within the last year, there was a pretty traumatic injury that I had spearheaded there, and that was made really possible because of the crew. The people you don't see behind the curtain were so efficient at helping and making sure that they facilitated the maintaining the C-collar and C-spine and getting the help that they needed, guiding the ambulance and paramedics through what could have been a very treacherous path. I made that very easy, thankfully. Minneapolis Trauma Center is just down the street from the ice rink, and it's a very happy ending. But
that's fantastic. That's what I was going to ask. Did we have a positive outcome in the end? Because that's always a concern.
Always nice to be able to finish a story like that with a happy return to play. Kind of what we talked about before. These skaters are tough as nails, and there was no exception in that case either. Again, I guess working through the EMS team and paramedics or ALS, if they're present or not, is my default. When it comes to dealing with local medical, I deal with that every week, admittedly. Workers' compensation is something that we kind of juggle around and work around as best we can. And internationally, sending them to a doctor sometimes, thankfully in Scandinavia, there's a lot of multilingual care. And so the language barrier isn't as big of an issue. But being able to go with the performer, whomever they may be, and speak the language, as I usually say, kind of when he gets in, you get into a doctor's office, that terminology may be very intimidating and foreign to just your normal lay person. So being able to explain not only what it is that they do for work, but also explain who I am and how I can help. And the evaluation that I've already done can save a lot of time and also kind of put, not kind of, it usually puts my athlete at ease in understanding that I am their advocate on the show, but then externally as well. I'm just here to help and because I care.
You're their friend in time of need, not just healthcare provider.
100%.
That really has got to set their mind at ease in a foreign country, foreign land, you know, with all the verbal issues, not speaking the languages or knowing the customs. Just a friendly face in that situation that you know medically could be huge. Never thought about that. Wow.
Two languages, yeah.
Yeah. You talked a little bit about stuntmen, and we talked a little bit about performing. We had a great episode talking with John Travolta's longtime stuntman and gentleman that works with De Niro a lot, and it just his reel is huge, put it to you that way. There's so many things he's been on. And it's just so impressive what these performers will go through to make what we see, whether that's on the ice or on the screen or on a play, happen. But over the years, has there ever been a time where you're standing on the side and you look and you're going, wait a minute, should we be doing this?
I mean, yeah, I suppose that's pretty open-ended, thankfully. There's a couple of times I think, wow, like, I don't know that that was the smartest choice. I will preface my comment now by saying, and I'm actually quite proud of this, the company that I work for, Feld Entertainment, has a massive priority on safety.
Oh,
And
that's
I can't
fantastic.
stress that
That's
enough.
good.
It really is, and it makes our job as athletic trainers for the company that much better. With the harnesses that they wear and the rigging and the safety checks that they go through, I only speak to that because I have been made aware that that's not always the case on every set and every production. So for that, I am extremely grateful. That said, even the greatest safety protocol doesn't prevent accidents, and that's exactly what we're talking about. So yeah, there's times that as a stunt person, you push those limits because, quite frankly, that's what got you the job, is pushing the envelope and doing what you do. So there are times that you think, well, I don't know how to tell you not to do that. So my default a lot with them was that we want to be, safe, but also dynamic and, responsible, right? So telling them these
Responsible.
are,
There we go. I like that.
Yeah, calculated risks, and let's be safe in what we're doing, but know your limits as well as where they are and how much you can push those. The ice skaters are equally courageous, let's say. Maybe that's the best adjective. I think there's so many times where you're building a show in particular, we think, well, what if we did this and let's try this? And thankfully, more often than not, in my experience, the stunt performers in general have been the one to kind of blow the whistle and say, well, I can do that, but you're asking me to do that 12 times a week for the next 47 weeks. That's not sustainable. So while I can do that, let's find something that I can replicate safely and consistently and that will look good over a longer stretch of time. And those are the veterans and those are the really talented people that separate themselves from others, because there's a lot, I'm sure, with that conversation you had and with others that will say, yeah, no problem, I can do that to secure the job and to get it done. The people who last longer in these professions are those that know their limits and they know kind of where that line is.
That makes such perfect sense. It really does, because those people go, yeah, I can do it. They might not last too long, just like you said. Yep.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that are going to be, or guys or gals that might be in your office and medical tent or whatever clinic it's a little too often, right?
Exactly.
Know that all too well in any setting. Now, the performing arts, as you said early, kind of a newer area in our field of athletic training, but still quickly growing. More and more people are getting into it. More and more people are finding it just fascinating and just demanding. And, well, I'll be honest, I found it cool. I mean, it was so cool to be part of the performing arts as a former athlete who had no clue what dance was at that point. I mean, it was just so neat to see someone so athletic do something so different. Throughout this process, have you been able to give back or give others insight into the performing arts as an athletic trainer and possibly how to get through it?
Gosh, I sure hope so. With the company now, as I said, I started working on 8 years. Everyone that's part of the company as an athletic trainer now has been hired since. And I really value those relationships that I've established, whether it be by training them in the company. We don't hire newbies, let's say. There's a certain level of experience that we require if you're going to deal with professional athletes. And by every definition, that's exactly what we're working with. You know, I think it's really kind of become one of those interesting things that in school and growing up and you go through your clinical rotations, you think, man, this is such a wealth of knowledge and experience. And you try to just soak it all in. And then ironically, at some point, which I guess I have had the occasion to kind of flip that script and realize, like, well, hang on, I recognize these questions that are coming at me because I've asked them as well. And so to be on the other side of that coin, it's unique, and you sure hope that, you know, the advice that I give and the direction and kind of guidance is not only helpful, but also something that they can internalize and think, okay, that, let me apply that. And, you know, the trickle down from that is hopefully it's effective and helpful. You kind of touched on it earlier with this networking thing. And I, One of the things I always tell students when they ask is the networking aspect. And I was told very early on, the verbiage is, it's all in who you know. And I've contested that a lot. And I said, I don't actually believe that. I don't think it's who you know. I believe it's who knows you. And
oh, I like that.
I know a lot of people, but if they don't know who I am, because I've not networked, introduced myself, shaken that hand, or done that work, it doesn't matter. So when your preceptor or your teacher or whomever it is says, get in there, get your hands dirty, go and volunteer, go do all of these things, that's the follow-up conversation that I always have is, in doing that, make sure they know who you are. Because in my experience in professional sports anyway, and that's even carries on beyond, when athletic trainers talk and positions open up and they're going to call their colleagues and their friends, hey, do you know anybody? And you want your name to be one of those people they call you, like, hey, you know anybody? Actually, I got a heck of a student here and I think they'd be a great fit. And I can't think of a better example of networking than that.
That's a drop mic moment. That was perfect. You might have just named the episode too. Yeah, no, that is so true. It really is who knows you, not who you know. Fantastic comment. You might want to coin it. You might want to trademark it.
Trademark that. And,
yeah, there you go. I like that. I really appreciate that. That's what we tell our students. That's what we tell our interns. I'm a preceptor for two different universities. And if they can take one thing away, that's it right there. No doubt about it. Yeah, it's who knows you, not just who you know. And then you have to have the knowledge. If you don't have the knowledge, they're going to forget you pretty quick.
Yeah, well, your point is valid. You have to have that knowledge because the head athletic trainer when I was at the University of Hawaii said he would happily write a letter of recommendation for anyone. What that letter says is a whole nother thing. So that's the... This all builds and builds, doesn't it? So yep. There's something to be said for that. Make sure that those who know you in the right light and for being competent and responsible and all the other adjectives that come with that.
So true. Well said. In this conversation, you've touched on so many things and so many different career points. So unique. I'm just absolutely fascinated and inspired and a little jealous, I'll be honest. I've been out of high school for 27 years. Damn, I wouldn't mind traveling everywhere. But I know my wife would be a little mad at me. Is there any regret in any of, you know, all this travel and all that you've done? Is there anything that you wish you would have done different?
You know, I try not to dwell on that too much. You know, I don't really believe there's anyone that has zero regrets at all, you know. But that said, I really struggle to find, you know, negative things about this. I kind of mentioned before, there's something to be said for not having your family around, not having your close friends that you grew up with and so on and so forth. That said, I do make an effort, as I mentioned before. It's very difficult for me to get home, but my father just spent Christmas with me in London. And so
that's
I can
fantastic.
Bring him there. I spent a couple years ago, I brought mom and dad to Paris. I have a son who is next tomorrow will be 18, and he has traveled more than a healthy 18-year-old should have probably. But as a result, it's one of the things I'm most proud of. He has gone through Europe. He's been to Australia. I brought him to Japan, all over the United States. He has received an education outside of school that I think not too many parents get that opportunity. His life with my ex-wife in the States is unique in that it brings a lot of educational moments as well. When you want to learn about a culture or a language or literally anything else about that place, my advice is to go experience it firsthand. As a result, he is a little less quick to anger when dealing with people who are uncomfortable in a setting that they're not. And I think that was by design. Hopefully, if you put yourself or your children or your colleagues and friends and family in positions where I think you are humbled is probably the best way to say it. You're a little more compassionate, probably more learned as well. Well, hopefully, as you take some of those life lessons back. And then kind of hope and pray that that trickles down to building character and you know, all the things you hope for. So as far as regrets, Maybe that I could do more, but as far as the job setting that I'm in, I have no regrets in that regard. How I got here is unique, as you kind of are already identified. So maybe I could have made a few less mistakes, but I feel like those mistakes that I've made have helped me grow and learn and become the athletic trainer and just the human being that I am. So most things teach us and we grow from, and what we make of those, I think, is really what defines us.
I love your answer. Thank you. That was fantastic. Couldn't have said it better myself. I probably would have fumbled way too much. So I loved it. I don't
Well, that's
think you
great.
should have regrets at any point,
Yeah.
because it what has happened in the past has makes you who you are now, and that's what you have to be happy with right there. Now, I did notice we do have one thing in common, and you are the first that I'm aware of, and I want to just ask a quick question. So again, this is the second time I've asked a question I've never had to ask before.
All right.
If I remember correctly, on here it says you are an Eagle Scout. Is that true?
It is. My parents were adamant that before I was allowed to get my driver's license, I was to be an Eagle Scout. So I was 15, I got my Eagle Scout.
Oh, wow. You did it young. You did it early. Holy crap.
Yeah, well, there's only so many places you can take a girl on a bicycle, so that driver's license is golden ticket to all of the other things that young men and women care about. So yeah, that's not something that, I really think about too often, but there's a lot of life skills I learned, and I'm very proud of being an Eagle Scout. Yeah.
What did you do for your project?
It's funny, I worked with two other at least, yeah, two other scouts, and we had gone and put up these trail markers on a trail that was, blisteringly hot, and we earned every bit of that merit badge. Well, like most Eagle Scouts, I presume their mother deserves most of the credit. But yeah, the Eagle Scout project was to put up trail markers for this just immensely long trail and dig the post, which is where I learned what a post digger was, and
Sure.
set those things up. So yeah, it was beautiful.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The irony there, my mom threatened me, 17 and a half, and I'd been eligible for the Eagle Scout since I was 15. And she looked at me and said, "You like your Mustang, 1969 302 V8 engine? Love my car." And she's like, "Yep, well, that's going to be mine when you turn 18 if you don't have your Eagle."
Okay, that's
Boy,
motivation.
just like you said. Thanks, Mom, for the motivation. And yep, it's
Yeah.
all because of her. Too funny, too
Yeah.
funny.
Well, three boys and myself being the oldest and my other brother being the youngest both got ours. And I think sheer stubbornness, my middle brother elected to, I think he got all the way to life and just said, I'm good and tapped out. But
So the producer who's going to be editing this is going to hear the same thing. Go, dang it, he worked it into the episode, didn't he? That's right where my brother ended. So yeah, too
that's
funny,
funny.
too funny. Don't want to take too much of your time. Want to give you the rest of the day to do whatever you want, but wanted just to ask maybe one more question.
Sure.
If you could go back and look at yourself or a younger version of you, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh, well, I like to think of myself as young as it is, but no, in all seriousness, I think patience is something that I've learned along the way and tried to cultivate more and more of. It's not something just God-given, I don't think, all the time. I consider myself a pretty patient person, but man, there's a lot of life lessons that would have been a lot easier to learn with a little bit more patience, not only myself, but in others and whom I work with and interact with. That said, I think that same lesson is applicable today. I try to breathe a little slower, take my time. They say the fastest way to get somewhere is by going slowly. I think if I can speak to my younger self, is just have that little extra patience, whether it's personal life, education, whatever the case may be, or professionally. There's nothing that urgent that an extra moment to pause and really think through what you're about to do or what you're about to say sometimes, that there isn't time for that. So that's probably my message to myself.
Fantastic advice. Patience. Yeah, I got to learn that still. I'm working on that. Yeah, I'm
Thanks.
young at heart, but yeah, got to teach this old dog that trick. That's for sure. Well, Jay, I want to thank you for being on. our podcast today, Wrap It Up Sports Medicine More. This was so much fun and so enlightening. What a seriously cool career you've developed for yourself. And again, it goes back to being an advocate for yourself. So that's hopefully inspiring to some of our listeners, and they're still out there and still thinking, hey, you know, I want to go this direction, just like Jay did. Make it happen, right?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being on our podcast, and you have a great day out there, man.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed it, so thank you.
Hopefully we'll have you back sometime. Enjoy Norway next love week, to. Right?
Yeah, I'd love to. That's great. We'll check in later. All the best. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Hallett. It is produced by Gabriel Hallett. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Hallett Consulting, LLC.